WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On WNYC, and some big news around our newsroom is that WNYC's longtime education reporter Beth Fertig is an author. She took a book leave for all of last year, as you may know, to explore some shocking instances of New York City public school students who get through the system without being taught how to read. Her book is now out, and it's called Why Can't You Teach Me to Read? Three Students and a Mayor Put Our Schools to the Test, published by FSG. We're so proud of Beth's original investigative work on this. And Beth, congratulations on the book.
Thank you so much.
You follow three learning disabled students who had to actually use the legal system to fight for the right to learn how to read. Who are these students?
The students that I met were steered to me by the group Advocates for Children of New York. And I was looking into the very low graduation rate of students in special education. Advocates for Children had done a story that the neediest students in special ed only had a 1% graduation rate. And I thought that was just amazing to me that only 1% of these special ed students were graduating. It turned out these were the students in what the city calls District 75, the students with the greatest needs. But about 12% of the city's students are in special ed. And when I looked into the total figure, I found that fewer than 25% of them, about 20% were graduating. And the rest were either dropping out or getting what's called a special ed diploma, for lack of a better word. They don't have to meet the state standards. They can just meet whatever their individual goals are and
which
graduate.
Graduating without learning how to read?
Which is exactly what happened to Yamilka. Now, she didn't want to give her full name, but I met her in 2006 when I did this radio series, which we called Disabling Diplomas, because it was about students with disabilities who weren't graduating or not getting real diplomas. Yamilka had graduated high school at the age of 21, knowing only 8 letters of the alphabet.
Wow.
And she was not mentally retarded, although at one point she was sort of identified that way. But what had happened to her was she came to the United States at the age of 10 with an interrupted education from the Dominican Republic. She had missed several years of schooling because of a family crisis. Her family had come here first, her parents and some of her siblings. She was left behind with her brother, and for, you know, a tragic reason, they didn't end up going to school. And when they got to the United States eventually and were enrolled in public schools in the Bronx, both she and her brother, it turned out, had learning disabilities that were never formally recognized. It took 4 years for Yamilka even to be sent to special education classes. Mm. They kept her in English as a second language classes. And then when she was sent to special education classes in junior high, all they did was stick her in a class with, you know, 15 students and one teacher, a smaller class, but not really recognizing what her specific needs were. And then that entitled her when she graduated, and her brother, who was still in school, was struggling, also unable to read because they weren't really doing anything with him.
Alejandro, and he's one of the other three.
Yes,
who
Alejandro.
You profile. Now, you have an audio clip here of you with Yamilka. Do you want to set this up?
Sure. This was from the 2006 radio series where I met Yamilka, and she was 22 or 23 at the time, and I wanted to see how well she was able to read. So we went to a supermarket together in the Bronx.
Some vegetables, broccoli.
Yeah, broccoli.
Yeah. Every week, 22-year-old Yamilka and her older sister Yahaira make a shopping trip to their local supermarket in the South Bronx. They start in the produce section, arguing, like sisters do, about how many apples they need.
Why not? What's wrong with them?
They're all mushy.
And which tomatoes are too mushy.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're going to eat them anyway.
Yamilka often has a difficult time shopping without her sister, and it's not because she needs advice on vegetables. It's because Yamilka can barely read. She knows the produce section by sight, but she only knows a few of the vegetable names on the signs.
A little
Carrie?
Most of the time, she sounds out letters, knowing one word perhaps, but not two in a row when they form a name.
Beans.
What is that word?
I don't know.
The word is green.
All right, an excerpt from Beth Fertig's 2006 report on disabling diplomas. Her new book is called Why Can't You Teach Me to Read? Three students and a mayor put our schools to the test. So Yamilka, 3 years ago, your subtitle, as I just said, is Three Students and a Mayor Put Our Schools to the Test. Has the Bloomberg administration tried to react to the failure to teach students to read in new ways?
Well, these students, Yamilka and her brother, eventually persuaded the city. There's a hearing process that you can go to if you have special education needs. And under federal law, you're guaranteed an individually tailored instructional program for whatever your disabilities are. They won hearing processes.
She didn't actually persuade the education department. She took them through this legal process.
Yes.
And got, in effect, a court. I don't know if it's considered a court, but a hearing order for the city to provide her with remedial tutoring, correct?
Exactly. So there's this system that you can go through if you're in special education, and if you know about it. She didn't know about it the whole time she was in school, but her brother found out when he was in high school still unable to read, and a guidance counselor steered him for another evaluation, and he learned that you could get lawyers at Advocates for Children and other nonprofits to challenge the system and say, this child is not being given their specialized services. They deserve to get either, you know, more intensive tutoring or whatever it is. In this case, it was too late for Yamilka and her brother to get any services from the public schools. She had already graduated. He was toward the end of high school. So they won through this hearing process. It's not like suing the city. It's, you know, you go to a fair hearing officer. And they each won hundreds of hours of tutoring. She won 1,500 hours. He won close to 2,000 hours. The tutoring's about $100 an hour. So the two of them together won about $300,000 worth of tutoring services paid for by the city, which is sort of an admission of educational neglect to refund them in a way, you know, their education by saying, okay, we screwed up. You can go for private tutoring and see if you can learn to read.
So was there a systemic response to cases like this when Bloomberg came in with his reforms?
No, this had been going on forever. You know, this had been going on for a long time. And, you know, there's thousands of cases like this a year. Nobody even keeps track. They can't track them specifically. I've asked the lawyers from Advocates for Children. I've asked the city. But what they do know is that the city does spend about $89 million last year, I believe it was, on students who, because of their special needs, won private school tuition, which is another way you can go if you figure out how to use the system. And so the city is, you know, saying, my God, this is a lot of money to be spending. There was a class action suit. The city had to even expedite these cases. And so they've hired more lawyers to deal with the cases. Mm. And what they did do is they decided that by using more intensive tracking of students with data, which is part of what's happened with No Child Left Behind, by focusing on more reading interventions, they would try to lift the scores of all students, but also get these kids at the bottom so that they hopefully wouldn't have to go through things like this.
And that's a lot of the impetus behind No Child Left Behind on a national basis. And that's the impetus of a lot of the Bloomberg and Klein reforms on a local basis, focusing on the kids in the bottom fifth and even in the lowest parts of the bottom fifth, like the three who you profiled. You also profile Education Department official Jim Liebman, who is determined to use data. Data is his thing, to track the progress of every child, kind of like the NYPD's CompStat system helped transform policing. The education system is called ARIS. How does ARIS work?
ARIS is a computer system, a web-based computer system. It stands for Achievement Reporting. Oh, God, I can't believe I'm spacing out on it now. But Achievement Reporting Innovation System. And it's what it does is, under the No Child Left Behind law, states were required to disaggregate their kids and figure out how are all children doing, not just say, you know, 60% of our kids met state standards or graduated. You have to say, how many of your black students, how many of your white students, how many of your Asian, Hispanic students, your disabled students, so that you couldn't just hide them under the rug. That's one thing educators did like about No Child Left Behind. Jim Liebman was trying to come up with and succeeded in building a system designed by IBM that would track students, all of their demographic information, all of their grades, all of their information about their family's special ed status, which was currently spread out on different computer systems, merge them into one so that teachers and principals could look at how their students were doing over time. And these data systems are not unique to New York. They actually started in Florida and Texas in the late 1980s and 90s during the standards movement. And New York is just the biggest school district in the nation, New York City, to do this. It's an $80 million system. And on top of being able to track the students, what Liebman wanted the teachers to be able to do is give the students more, I guess you would call them assessment tests, practice tests, so that you wouldn't know, you would be able to know throughout the school year how they were doing, and you wouldn't wait until that big annual test to see that a student like, you know, Yamilka or her brother Alejandro was failing. You would be able to know earlier in the year, oh, gee, this kid is still not being able to read. Well, maybe we need to give them some special intervention, although those kids would hopefully be in special ed and it wouldn't come as a surprise.
So is the ARIS system working as advertised? You write in the book that some teachers use the ARIS data, some not so much.
Well, it's a mixed bag, and it's getting better. What happened was, I think they set the expectations very high when they rolled this out in 2007, and you know, awarded IBM an $80 million contract, and the teachers were all saying, you know, my God, wouldn't this money be better spent reducing class sizes, or you know, why more testing? Why all this focus on the data? But what happened is, as they got them learning how to use it, there was sort of a group of super users. Not all teachers were using it, so there was controversy about whether it was a waste of money because not all teachers were using it. But as they got these small inquiry teams at every school to use it, a select group of data specialists and reading specialists or math specialists and coaches, they would pick out the lowest performing kids or a small group of low performing kids and say, what's going on with these kids over the course of the school year? And then they would learn things like, one school I visited in the Bronx, PS 157, they were looking at some English language learner kids in this Hispanic neighborhood in the South Bronx. And they learned that the kids, by keeping them after school, and they thought that they just needed to spend more time reading stories to them and getting them familiar with learning what was going on in the stories, for example, so that they could pass the tests and learn things like main idea and how to summarize. They discovered that the kids really didn't have the vocabulary. These were fourth graders and fifth graders. And that's very common, especially in low-income communities where kids don't have parents who are well-educated, whose parents don't speak English. And they began keeping the kids after school and giving them, like, vitamins, you know, like vocabulary lessons where they would just repeat all the new words in a story to them again and again and again and have them draw stories where they were using these words visually and then retelling stories. And that would give them more vocabulary, which would hopefully help them improve as they were getting older. They would be able to keep up on their reading because they wouldn't be wondering, oh, what did that word mean? And then they wouldn't know how to keep up with the assignments.
WNYC's Beth Fertig here in our studio talking about her new book, Why Can't You Teach Me to Read? Three Students and a Mayor Put Our Schools to the Test. And Beth, I was interested in your section about the standardized reading curriculum that the Bloomberg team tried in 2003 that was so minutely detailed in its instructions that it was considered teacher-proof. That's an interesting concept and an interesting word that they use to make a reading curriculum teacher-proof. Why did they use that word?
Well, this is something that urban cities in particular, where kids move around a lot and are coming to school with not a lot of skills sometimes and where they have a lot of new teachers, they want a curriculum that is teacher-proof, meaning that a new teacher is able to follow the curriculum and do something pretty scripted. And, you know, there's more consistency throughout the system.
And now, I guess also in a massive system like New York with 80,000 teachers, quality will vary very widely. There's no way to avoid that.
Now, a real teacher-proof curriculum is something that's tightly scripted and has a lot of focus on phonics, which they used in L.A. called Open Court, and which the former chancellor, Rudy Crewe, used in a bunch of failing schools that he put together and called the Chancellor's District.
In
he used a reading program called Success for All. What Bloomberg did is actually less teacher-proof in a way. It's called Balanced Literacy, and there's been decades, a century worth of wars, reading wars over what's the best way to teach kids to read. Do you let them get excited about whole books, or do you give them these, you know, phonics lessons early and often? And Bloomberg chose a system called balanced literacy, which attempts to combine both. But you may remember that there was some controversy when the Bush administration put a lot more focus on phonics, and New York almost lost federal funding because it didn't have enough phonics in its reading
program.
Right.
And Beth, it seems to me that you kind of dismiss the whole language movement in the book as too romantic, this idea that kids will learn to read by being drawn into literature and you can't hold them back from reading, basically, rather than drilling them on the phonics. Did you come to that conclusion?
No, I think what I came to the conclusion was that any reading program can work as long as the teacher knows what they're doing. And most kids are going to learn to read no matter what you give them. Experts say that, you know, 75 or 80% of kids are going to learn to read. The problem is when you get these kids who don't come to school prepared, haven't had, you know, much reading to them at home, don't have much of vocabulary like those students up at the Bronx school that I mentioned, or come from families where their parents never had a formal education, like Yamilka and her brother, and Antonio, the other boy that I profile, who bounced around from school to school every single year because he was in special education classes and, again, won a settlement because he didn't learn how to read. Then at that point, you need to focus on what are the basics that students are missing. And the Bloomberg administration did encourage teachers to use more reading interventions where they do more like drilling in phonics, A, apple, eh, E, eh, egg, eh, you know, sounding out these letters. And I saw little kids doing this, but I also saw middle schoolers doing this because they'd pull kids aside for this type of extra instruction. A middle schooler is not really happy sitting in class all day learning the sounds of the letters, but there are kids who need to do that. And unfortunately, it's hard to keep them interested when they're older and have the time to do that. So it's a very difficult challenge right now to make sure that you're reaching every child. And in some cases, teachers feel like looking at this data, testing their kids more often is helping them. But there's other teachers who feel like this is a huge waste of time. I know which kids are learning. I can follow which books they're reading, for example, and know if they're keeping up with their instruction. And you have a real split of opinion right now about whether this data is a good thing or a waste of time.
We're going to run out of time soon, but after doing all this research, how would you grade the Bloomberg administration in its effort to get all kids to be able to read?
That's a tough question, Brian, and I think that we're not going to know the answer for a few years, because right now, the one thing that we know is that the test scores went up, right? But there's also a big controversy over whether those tests are valid because test scores went up throughout the state. And New York City argues it went up even higher. All kids took the same test. Okay, that's impressive. They went up. We also know that on the national tests, New York City remained pretty stagnant or only went up a little bit. And then we know that the kids at the bottom, kids like Yamilka and her brother, those kids who were at level one, not learning at all, there were 18% of those kids when Bloomberg took office. Now there's only 3% scoring in the bottom. Hmm. But we don't know if those kids are going to be reading well enough to graduate high school. We know that they're reading well enough to read the book, the words on the page, and we know that more kids are getting level three, meeting state standards. But the Bloomberg administration acknowledges that an eighth grader who gets a level three on their state exam, meets the state standards, has only a 55% chance of graduating high school. If that child were to get a level 3.5, you know, do better within the range of the score, then they have more than an 80% chance of graduating high school. So the state standard, in other words, is pretty low. So to boast that 69% of your kids are reading at state standards and 80% of your kids are doing math at state standards, we don't know if that's good enough to graduate. So Brian, right now the graduation rate, 56%, it's gone up about 10 points in 5 years. That's good, right? But 56%.
Still 56%.
Exactly. So I would argue that we need to give this more time and see how were those kids who entered school as, you know, kindergartners, first graders, will their teachers identify them, give them everything they need, and keep pushing them all through high school to do better than just meeting the state standard?
WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig. Her brand new book is called Why Can't You Teach Me to Read? Three Students and a Mayor Put Our Schools to the Test. Beth, again, congratulations on the book. Great work.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in just a minute. Those nice people who bought Stuyvesant Town so they can convert it from rent-stabilized housing to market-rate housing Looks like they may be about to default on their loan. We will look into that in a minute.